This show is sponsored by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off of your order of any of their great products. Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport, and Strong Bone. And again, use code word CHURCH to get 10% off. This show is also sponsored by HitEcigs.com. That's hit, the letter E, cigs.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. They have e-cigarettes and e-cigars. Use code word Joey's Church. That's Joey's Church, and get 20% off of your order.
Are you kidding me or what? Monday, November 10th. Fucking tremendous. Fuck Monday Night Football. Take those bong hits, couple donuts, some chocolate milk, put your feet up. Relax at the church, motherfuckers. Here we go. Oh shit. Who's breaking? Go, 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 go trip. Go trip. Go trip. Go trip. Go trip. Oh shit, ladies and gentlemen. The church coming to you. Blast. Put that music on, Lee. What the fuck? Oh shit. Oh shit. Whatever the fuck you were doing, you ain't doing no more. Ricky, 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 Ricky. Ricky, 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 Ricky.
Jam on it. Jam on it. Just a jam, just a jam, jam on it. Don't stop your body. Rock.
Are you fucking kidding me? What were you doing with your life? November 10th, the day the devil took it in the muffler. Where's the devil? There he is. Oh shit.
Come on. Robot, 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 robot.
This is too much. This is too much. I seen these motherfuckers open up a Prince. Keep it up, Lee. Keep this motherfucker. Get up. Get up, cocksuckers. The Marines' birthday today. Get up. Here we go. Here we go. Black people. What? 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 Are you fucking kidding me or what? Are you kidding me?
I used this to don't kill stop. It.
This is a minute. You haven't stopped. You're just in a groove right now, doing bumps. Forget about it. What do you know about this, Lee? What?
I know nothing about it.
Are you fucking kidding
Lee,
me?
Lee, you never break dance?
Oh, yeah. I broke dance, but no, not with the bumps.
The only thing you broke was the table, cocksucker. Who are you kidding?
I danced on the floor.
When did you break dance? You haven't broke dance
in I did life? A lot before we met.
Get the fuck out of here. The church, what's happened now, you bad motherfuckers? My main man, Lee Syatt, with the Israeli flag throwing heat back there. And his main man guest tonight, Mr. Sammy Trips. What up, you bad motherfucker?
What's
you,
the word, Joey Diaz?
You know, Johannesburg.
Bringing it back to the old days.
Old school. No,
early
no.
80s.
I'm telling you, that's the... I don't know what happened today. Today, I heard that on Sirius something.
What's your channel? Backspin?
No, I'm... What was it?
You're a vinyl something?
Vinyl.
Vinyl's good.
Ozzy's Boneyard.
Like 80s?
Lithium. Lithium is good. Badass. Lithium is badass.
Yo. Let me ask you, I would argue that the late 80s, early 90s time of music, I would put that up against almost any decade of music. You know, everyone loves the 60s and 70s saying that that was the best time. But man, you look at what happened in the late 80s, early 90s, hip-hop, rap was, hip-hop was starting to come in, metal, all the metal was still rocking, grunge was starting to come in, everything was like at this apex of music, in my opinion.
Nah, you still gotta go with 70 through 75.
Like, who are we up against?
You're up against Led Zeppelin's first album. You're up against the Who, you're up against the Stones. You gotta figure from 70 to 75, all these bands, Black Sabbath's first album, all these bands were emerging. Not to mention a guy by the name of Elton John that destroyed the 70s. So that, no, I'm not arguing with you that it like crushes it or anything. I just feel that time period, if you look at the bands that were out, you know, God knows what would have happened if Lynyrd Skynyrd would have lived. I've always said that. If Lynyrd Skynyrd would have lived, what would have happened? Would the Cars exist? Would any of that shit? Because Lynyrd Skynyrd was just about to destroy, to steamroll. They had the momentum. They partied. They fucking had black people in the band.
Yeah.
They fucking had two drummers. You know, it was a different time. They had destroyed the Stones in London.
Yeah,
they opened up for them Stones, buried them in their backyard. They had buried somebody else. Now they were on the road, I think, with Ted Nugent, just taking them to the cleaners. They were just a power. So who knows? Who knows? I can't. And that's the late, that's 77, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what the name of the, I forget. All this shit is just too much. You know, we did a couple gummies today, me and Lee. We did a Chiba Chew. At the end, your memory goes kaput. We can't do it no more. So I might say something fucked up. But that's my only real argument. I didn't dig the 60s that much.
Who was the 60s? Like Hendrix, right? Hendrix,
the Beatles. So that's a, you know.
Grateful Dead.
Yeah, the last couple of, anybody catch? I know you caught it. Have you seen the documentary on HBO on James Brown?
No.
I haven't seen that, no.
You guys got to, it's all over. He came out as a Little Richard impersonator at first. Little Richard had hit, so they put him on the road to fill in 33 of his dates or something. It's amazing. James Brown is amazing. The hardest working man in show business.
That movie they just did was really great.
Yeah, no, but this documentary is fucking tremendous.
And the guy who played that in that movie plays like every black guy.
Yeah, he's just in Marvel now.
Yeah.
He just got the Marvel thing. So he did? Jackie Robinson.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he was Jackie Robinson. Who else?
James Brown.
James Brown.
Now, who is he?
Now he's something, the Black Panther.
Oh, okay. Because I hate when they take like an established character and flip him. And like make him something else that he isn't.
Is that the Black Panther? Is it correct?
No, I think it's probably the Black Panther.
I'll look it up.
But like they made the Green Hornet gay now. I think the new Batman movie, Robin is a chick. You know, just like, come on, man, make your own character.
It's like the Ghostbusters, they're making them women.
All women.
And the fat chick's definitely in it.
McCarthy?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's funny.
Yeah, if she's not in it, then yeah, I gotta
they ain't
make
working.
It.
Yeah,
he's Black Panther.
How did that movie do with him and St. Vincent? Yeah, how'd it do?
I'm not sure. Simone said he liked it, but I haven't.
Simone likes everything.
It died a slow death. People read right through it. I read right through it. I just knew that we're getting two people putting them together.
Let's see if this works out. Oh, was that with Bill Murray? Bill Murray one? Yeah. Well, she just did a movie with her husband wrote. I don't know. So she's on fire, too.
Who'd she do a movie with?
Her husband wrote a movie. What was that movie where she played the super drunk chick who drives around drunk? I don't even know.
Oh, Tammy.
Yeah.
Oh no, I didn't even see that. This did. It's grossed $27 million, and so far, and its
Bless
budget
you,
was $13 million. So it's done okay. But like opening weekend, it did just over $100,000. So
who? What?
Yeah, it's tough.
Who did $100,000?
St. Vincent. But, I mean, that might have been...
Bill Murray?
That might have been a limited release. I don't know, but it's... So
what, your house?
Maybe. But so far, it's grossed $27 million. So.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good to start out with $100,000 and then get to $27
million. But they cost $13 million to make.
Right. So, I mean, it wasn't a success.
They made money. Yeah, they made money. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you think the pair would... I thought it would make $65 million, but then I started watching the trailer, and I'm like, I guarantee this is the best parts of the movie.
Yeah.
And the trailer's not that fucking good.
Well, I don't know if people younger than me, maybe like 20, but like younger than 2018, I don't know if they really know who Bill Murray is, to be honest.
That might be true.
Caddyshack was old.
They used to know him as that guy who shows up on Gawker and takes pictures at random places, like at weddings and karaoke bars and stuff like that.
And he was in Zombieland, which is pretty great, but still, I mean, that... You had to really know who Bill Murray was to like get it.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
Zombieland brought the heat.
It's really weird how you think somebody's relevant because you were there during his heyday. Yeah. Now that shocks you. Like, even like Stallone, De Niro not drawing. There's so many people now that just don't draw.
Yeah.
You don't even know the movies come out.
Like, for that movie, people probably went to see it because Kevin Hart was in it, to be honest. I mean, that's probably what was the biggest draw at this point, which is pretty sad.
I think he might be the biggest draw right now.
Well, he has a movie every 4 months, but...
Sandra Bullock. I mean, they're both like two... There's not a lot of bankable people out there.
You know, but what they do now is completely different. The marketing, even the agencies, even your manager. Okay, when I was growing up, the first movie I saw with Eddie Murphy was 48 Hours. And then it took another year for him to come out with a movie, which was called Trading Places.
That was a great movie.
And then, you know, and then... But now it seems like people release 7 or 8 movies in a year. It's like they killed Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
That was embarrassing what they did with Vince Vaughn. People like the guy from No Man, No Old Country. What's his
name?
No
Country for Old Men.
Yeah, what's the guy's, the main
Bronson?
Guy?
Bronson, isn't it? Wasn't it Bronson?
There was a guy. Brolin. Well, Josh Brolin. No, I liked him, but there's a guy in that movie that, for 2 or 3 years, they put him in everything.
Javier Bardem.
No, the cop, the Southern cop that was chasing him.
Woody Harrelson.
No, it was
Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh yeah.
There was a while where they put Tommy Lee Jones. Me, I would have done one and a half movie a year, like one movie you're a lead. And then a half a year later, you come out as like the fifth guy, throw a little heat, get killed. And people are like, Jesus, man, why did he fucking get killed? You follow me? So you always kept people wanting you. Now, if a person makes a movie, they get right back in the studio and shoot it. You know, and it's funny, like that creep, like Jim Carrey now. Like, he didn't want to do Dumb and Dumber, but things got fucking bad for him.
Yeah.
So now he did Dumb and Dumber. What a fucking scumbag. For 20 years, they kept bugging him about Dumb and Dumber. He refused to do it. Once he stopped selling tickets, because you're right. You know, these people become irrelevant after a while, as great as they are. Mm-hmm. As great as they are. Tom Cruise still sells tickets, right?
Not like he used to, though.
Yeah, probably not. But he doesn't do it that often, though. So,
well,
I mean, that last Mission Impossible, I didn't like it, but it sold a lot of tickets.
I think something changed. When TMZ kind of started really, like, outing him on a bunch of stuff, like him... you know, the whole Scientology, like, video they put out of him.
That was creepy.
Then he's dancing on the couch. Like, I think they hurt him. Now, so I feel that, like, they went, some big, powerful company went and bought TMZ, and the message has totally changed. You don't see them ever really going after really huge, huge stars. That's why they kind of create these Vine stars and these reality stars that they kind of treat like fucking pinatas, and they beat the shit out of them so they don't ruin a brand. Like, how hard is it to build a Tom Cruise brand? You've been out here forever. It's impossible to build someone that big that it will bring, like, 50 mil guaranteed.
That's true.
So, like, they don't want to ruin those guys anymore. So they bought the company, and now they just, hey, oh, my God, look at this chick from VH1's fucking hip-hop and love or whatever it is, and they just treat those people like pinatas.
That'd be really funny if that was true. I mean, now that you're saying it, it kind of makes sense. Why not? They don't really need to pay reality stars.
Yeah.
So they pay them a little bit. They think they're famous, and then they can treat them like like awful people, and then the movie stars kind of skate by.
It's crazy that you do like a reality show for 4 years and you do become a big shot. You go, you bump people in Vegas at lines, and
yeah,
you yell at waiters, now get off me, you know, don't make eye contact,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, and it's like for no
for nothing, oh, because you're standing in front of a camera.
I couldn't imagine getting that overwhelmed with yourself like that. Like, that's when you see people like Screech is still doing comedy and he's still yelling at people and shit. That was 30 fucking years ago. And you're still yelling at people, telling people...
Doing everybody's cocaine. I heard these stories of him, like, people like, hey, man, you want to do some blow? He's like, yeah. He's like, can I have something? He'll do all their blow and come back. They're like, where's the rest of the blow? He's like, oh, I'm sorry, I did it all. I'm like, who does everybody's blow?
That's fucking nuts. That's crazy. He did sex tapes. He did everything he could to get back. Celebrity rehab, celebrity fitness. He did everything he could to get back there. And he just kept looking, you know, just looking worse and worse. It was like Paulie for a while.
Yeah.
For a while, Paulie. And now, you know, when you see Paulie, you can see he's matured. And he's just, he knows, that's it. That's it. You have your green light and you do the best you can with it, and you move the fuck on. It's when you try to hold on to it. You know the redhead from Goodfellas, the one that Henry Hill is his mistress? She had maybe 3 scenes. They called her a whore.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
On the couch. I went to a table read once. Had to be, oh, my God, 15 years ago on Sunset Boulevard. They had water, a bunch of white people, and she was there. Martin Landau was there. Alan Alda was there. It was just a really good script. They had it. The guy saw me at the store. He said, there's a part for like a fucking janitor I want you to read. You know, and I went there. I didn't know anything about table reads, guys. I just sat there like a fucking moron. I didn't talk to nobody, but I was always in shock on how she acted. She dressed up like she was going to a fucking...
like a ball?
Like a ball with a mink. And she had heels on, and how she came in, and people like looked at her weird, like it was completely fucking crazy.
Inappropriate? Would you overkill?
Overkill.
Overkill.
Overkill for what you had done since then. You know, like just.
Well, it must be kind of crazy. I mean, you've talked about how some comedians get babied or pampered. I mean, if for like that biggest movie came out, like you had it with The Longest Yard, like people doing everything for you, telling you how amazing you are. If that happens on a reality show for 10 years, you must just kind of get used to it. Like freaking Justin Bieber went into like the Pittsburgh Steelers Bible study this past weekend. Like that kid just must, I don't think he even realizes what he's doing.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he's got too big. I mean, when your parents are on the payroll, who puts you in your place? But would you do anything different than him, Joe? Seriously,
I mean, 22, no, I would even be crazier, be
banging everything that moves, just punching everybody.
At 21, somebody to give you $50 million, they're not doing you any favors. But here's where it gets the hardest: it's not what happens to you and the money they give you; it's the people that are around you. It's the people that are around you. They're the most important thing in those situations, and who you keep around you. Whether you want people to tell you you're the best, or if you're smart enough to keep one motherfucker around that'll go, "Hey man, what the fuck, guy?" And you're like, "You're right." You know, that's the difference. He has nobody around him that gives a fuck. It's like Britney Spears years ago. And then they realize it, and it's not too late. He'll be okay eventually, but everybody will fucking hate him by then. That's the problem with that little fuck. He was going to get beat up. He's going to get stabbed on Sunset. You know, shit like that. Somebody's going to hit him with a 2x4 when he's 42. You know, but it was all his behavior the last couple of years, how he acted towards people. And everybody he gets close to, I don't know. He hangs out with the weirdest fucking people to either make himself look stronger. I don't know. He's with the boxer all the time, right?
Yeah, Floyd Mayweather.
Floyd Mayweather. Yeah. Who else does he hang out with to be cool?
Every rapper possible. He loves to show up with rappers. I just think it's like he's like almost like a hot chick in that like a chick that's so hot, only crazy guys are have enough courage to actually hit on them, so they end up dating crazy people. And I think that's probably what happens with him. He's such a huge star that it takes a really crazy person to try to even approach him to be like, "Hey, let's be friends." Like, only crazy people go for it. And then he's letting these people in, and they're all nuts.
He hangs out with Chris Brown.
Oh, really?
He hangs out with he just keeps these fucking wackadoos around him, and they fuel his fire. And that's, hey, like I said, I can't imagine being 21 and being out here and being on a TV show and doing blow how I did and going out at night to these clubs. But that was never me anyway. But I'm just saying, let's say if you were into going out every night and people opening up doors and...
Well, you've talked about that you used to be mad at your stepfather for not giving you any money when your mom passed away. And like how if he had, it would have probably killed you.
It would have killed me. I don't know how I would... But I wouldn't have been like that. That was never my thing to go out and for people to see you and hang out and stand online. I just fucking hate that shit.
Yeah.
Whatever anti-paranoia package I had.
Social anxiety.
Up,
just, I have it.
I can't do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be seen. I don't want people talking to me at night when I'm, you know, so that shit never worked out for me. When you're stoned and you have your feet up and you have a Walkman / iPod / whatever the fuck the people listen to. What is it? Whatever the fuck it is. The thing I have on the plane.
iPod.
You know, when you're stoned and you're in the middle of fucking Pink Floyd Animals, do you really want anybody talking to you? I don't give a fuck if Tom Brady's wife comes in front of me naked. If I'm stoned and I'm into that groove, you're history around me. I don't want you talking to me. Why do you think I put music on loud in the car?
I don't know.
Why do you think when there's a good song in the car, going on in the car, your conversation does not matter.
Right, yeah.
That's the way I was raised. I don't know what the fuck. My wife will talk over music, and I'll tell her, "Stop, you're in no danger. There's nothing you want to say that's better than this fucking Pink Floyd right now." That's always been my thing. When I was a kid, I could go into the bedroom, smoke outside, wait till my mother left. I would go upstairs, lock the thing, and I've always been an earphone guy. You know why? I'll tell you why.
It brings you into it.
It brings me into it, but guess what else? I don't want you to listen to my music and something else. I don't want to hear your fucking music. Yeah. Let's cut a deal. Get the fucking earphones on and put them on. I like my music fucking loud, and I want it heavy, and you follow me?
Yeah.
So what makes you think I want to hear any fucking stupidity at any time? When I'm stoned to the gill and I put that iPod on, I'm walking down the street when I'm in a weird town, I love it. When I'm in a town that I don't live out, that's the best happiness that you'll ever get out of me. Is when music's blasting in my ears and I'm walking around and I'm not in touch with anything. I'm just in touch with thoughts and that fucking music playing. So that's as good as it gets for me. And you don't need $1 million.
That's why I like driving to Vegas. I love the zone. Oh, yeah, me too. It's 4 hours. I could fly and it's simple, but the drive is like 4 hours of just by yourself and your thoughts just go crazy. And it's like, because LA's constantly an attack on your senses no matter where you are.
Stop and go.
Yeah, stop You're always and go, thinking. Beeping, yeah. Hot chicks walking by. There's no way of focusing, but man, you go to Vegas, it's just...
Yeah, I did it, when you went to Tempe earlier this year, I could have got a plane ticket for like $150, but especially when you get out into the desert, you don't have to stop. I loved it. That's where I first found podcasts. I was driving out here from Boston, and when you get too far into the middle of the country, it's just like preachers actually preaching.
Yeah,
and
it's weird,
nothing
right?
really else. So that's what podcasts are made for.
I'm really, really fortunate that I never really liked that shit. And other people I surrounded myself like that shit. And after a while, even if you have friends that like a nightlife, after a while you won't be friends no more because you don't do what they like.
Right, you gravitate towards
people. So they disappear. But I've always gravitated towards people that they're not bar people. I've always liked people that are very satisfied with going to a restaurant, all of us, and just talking about comedy till 6 in the morning. That has always been a lot better for me. I can't stand talking over music. And I can't stand people talking to me up close. And I can't stand when you're stoned and somebody's drunk and they're trying to tell you something. It's two different wavelengths.
Vibrations.
And it's very rough. So it didn't match. So I knew that early on.
Was that hard getting coke then? Because you've talked about going to a lot of clubs and bars for that. So
I had a gift of slipping in. Slipping out and hold on, I gotta go see a guy outside.
Okay.
I always had a certain gift of having a hook. You can't go into one of those places unless you have a hook.
You do have an ability to get out.
You have to get out.
This guy does.
You have to learn how to get out. Get out quick. You know, and you have to lie and go whatever the fuck it takes, but you gotta go. You got a rock in your pocket. You're hot. If a cop comes in or something, you got a rock in your pocket. I will get a bump, a little bump, and do a couple bumps, and then I'll sit at a bar for a couple minutes. But while that rock is in my pocket, I don't like sitting at no fucking bar. And it became even worse once I got the felony, because now I got nowhere to go. You get me with drugs, I'm doing time. So I don't want to sit there with a rock in my pocket. I was always the king of hiding it somewhere, going in there and banging a little bit, giving myself room. So if a cop did come in, it came out of my pocket. I drop a half gram of blow in a pocket. It's 60 people. You can't pin it on me, bitch. Or you could go make a cocktail like Popeye Doyle did in motherfucking whatever, the French Connection.
We were talking about that before the podcast. Like, if you're scared when you travel with weed. When you were on probation right out of jail, was it terrifying doing drugs? Or it just didn't matter? Like, you just wanted to do the drugs?
I tiptoed my way around the drugs. But I wasn't stupid. Even though I always did drugs... Sam Tripoli wasn't going to come up to me and go, hey, man, you have great blow. I have a friend that wants to buy 2 ounces. That's where the conversation ended. I never took a drug bust. I took a bust for smoking weed on the street of Manhattan in 1982. And I took a probation read. But I never took a sales or possession rap for blow. It's on my record that I took, that I got arrested for blow in New York. But I was also... doing county jail in Seattle at the time. Somebody used my ID, so if they ever... I was doing like 11 days in Seattle on county jail, and that's when they arrested somebody who used my name in Jersey. I know who it is. But I was never that dumb to make those mistakes. I always smelled drug traps.
But not even that, but just even buying it and doing
No, because again, I knew exactly. I have my route planned. I know what time I'm going there. Before I go there, I take 2 rides around the block and see if there's cops anywhere. If they're sitting still to make a bust, I don't want to walk into a bust. Since I was a young kid, my mom had those bookie things in the city, so I knew how a bus gets organized. I know it starts 4 blocks away. There's a command post, so I know all these things, so that's what you look for.
So let's say you moved to L.A. and you're still doing coke. You've never been here before. What process do you go through to find a dealer who's not an undercover cop?
Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So maybe LA is a bad idea. Let's pretend it's a city that doesn't have a comedy store.
Go right to a comedy club. Okay. If there is, I had a particular gift that I could go anywhere and within 3 hours I could have somebody at a bar ready to rock. Just by certain words. Just go to a bar, get a drink, what's happening, what's going on, boom, 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 boom. And all of a sudden you'll see it. You'll see it. If you sit there long enough, you'll see people coming out of the bath. I'm not talking about the I'm not talking about the, you know, the club fire in your hometown. You all guys all know what a drug bar looks like and what a drug bar doesn't look like. It doesn't take a fucking genius. You go into a drug bar and people have nice shirts, it's not a drug bar. You go into a bar and they still have Leonard Skinner shirts and they're missing a tooth and they're dripping, their nose is dripping, and they're playing darts and you're home.
Yeah.
You'll get something. You'll leave there with a gun, gunpowder, fucking angel dust.
Are people still doing angel dust?
I don't know. They say heroin's PCP. Big. Last night I got stuck seeing, I was trying to make notes. I was trying to, you know, write like a biography for the webpage and do it. And I had Drugs Inc. on. And they were talking about heroin. Drugs Inc. is very interesting because I don't know anything about anything. But to see them watch meth and what's going on up in the Pacific Northwest, like Portland and Seattle, the heroin is rampant. Like it's all the crime is in white neighborhoods. Like fucking, it's crazy.
I think it's a lot like the crack epidemic in the black community in the 80s. And to the point where I honestly believe that there's powers that be that are behind this huge heroin epidemic that's going on with you hear stuff going on in Afghanistan where like U.S. forces are protecting poppy fields and shit like that. You're like, okay, you know, crack was black in the 80s and heroin, I think, is like, it's the same thing going on within the white community. It's gone crazy.
Everybody knows that after 9/11, when we attacked, I forget right now,
Afghanistan,
that heroin prices went down.
Did they really?
Heroin prices went down. More heroin came into the country. You know, if you go to Dearborn, Michigan, all that area, that's a very big Arab community. And I heard that heroin was rampant in the Detroit area. I mean, Detroit is fucking non-existent, guys. It's on his last legs. I know they got a couple grants or something. Shit's going on, but the heroin was deep there, you know. I know in Newark, the heroin was deep. My buddy OD'd on a $7 bag. He used to send them to me.
Yeah, dude.
$7 bags of heroin.
I've lost a couple friends over $7, the last couple years.
$7. So for $7, me and you right now could go get two fucking bags for a $20 bill of pretty fucking good heroin.
How long does it take to go from, like, weed to heroin? Like, I can't imagine right one day wanting to
right
shoot
after this
my
podcast.
No, but like a normal person.
You know, Lee, it's whatever.
I can't imagine shooting myself.
Whatever mingle you go. Listen, the first time I went behind a building or a church or whatever to take two hits off a fucking joint, I was anti everything. I was anti powder. I was anti acid. But once I smoked pot and heard music, because of my love for music, my friends told me it only gets better. You gotta fucking do this acid. And I remember doing a half a sheet and doing acid and listening to a Dark Side of the Moon run, whatever, On the Run, and just having like a heart attack in bed. Like, and then I liked that. I really enjoyed that. And then I would do THC crystal, which is, let's get the fucking, let's get the whatever out of the room.
Elephant.
It's angel dust. But angel dust
is
had
angel
this.
Angel dust different than crystal meth?
Completely.
What's the difference?
Crystal meth, you're going to scratch and stay up for fucking 14 fucking days. Angel dust is...
What is angel dust?
Animal tranquilizers, gorilla biscuits.
Gorilla biscuits.
They had 20,000 names for it. But at the end of the week, it was animal tranquilizer mixed with something else.
Jesus.
Like when I was at there was a certain age I had that there was two things that were very popular. It was angel dust and formaldehyde.
Oh,
okay.
The
so,
thing they use on dead bodies.
Oh, you would get fucked up, Jack.
Yeah, they did. They dip weed in.
You
that
dip
shit.
A joint of weed in formaldehyde. Those joints used to go for $20 in 1980.
Whoa!
And as soon as you got that shit,
that's a lot of money.
Like as soon as you put it in your wrapper here, as soon as you, it was, it smelled, it's, it was dirty, like you didn't even want to touch it.
Yeah, you had to put that in your mouth.
But you took that joint out, and you fucking lit it. Oh my God, six people, blasted.
What's it feel like? How's it different than a normal weed?
Okay, I'm gonna tell you what I used to do. I used to have this buddy, Carlos Perez. This is my beginning. This is my, this was a little before my mother died. I did THC crystal. That's what they sold it to us as. And we used to have to go to Union City and buy it to this bar on 22nd and New York Avenue across from Lieber Schlum Funeral Parlor. It's still there, which in reality was the county morgue. So that's how fucking, like, that's how bad of a sign it was. So first I used to get it up 39th Street, and you get it, and you, for $10, you got three lines. So for $3 at 14 and a half, 15, me, you, and fucko here got blasted. So what did it feel like? It felt like doing tranquil. It felt like doing heavy sleeping pills, but you stay awake.
Oh,
it fueled you, and everything moved real fast. So the first once or twice we did it, we would stay at the basketball court, and then you'd walk up to the fucking Chinese store. At the time, we called it the Chink store. We'd walk up to the Chink store, and then we'd walk home. And it lasted, you know, the heavy, heavy, intense feeling was about 3 or 4 hours. And then after that, you had about 4 hours of this daze that you communicated. You'd go home, talk to your mom and shit. As long as you kept in your room and didn't get asked big questions, the Declaration of Independence or something, you were covered. But we took it a little farther. We started taking it and going into the city. Here we are, 15-year-old kids, doing a $10 bag between three of us and getting on a bus and going to 42nd Street, getting off that fucking bus, walking on 42nd Street.
Which is Times Square.
Times Square, and hearing people yelling acid, marijuana, you know, whatever, cocaine, switchblades. And then we'd go and we'd play. We got caught. We'd play three-card Monty. But this is when it gets crazy, guys. This is when it gets the craziest. It would be like six of us. Sabatino, Ray Canella, who we had lunch with today. Don Phillips, Michael Special, Dominic Special, myself, Carlos Perez. Could be seven or eight of us. And we'd go into the city and say to each other, Trips, it's 5 o'clock. At 6:30, I'll meet you on 178th Street and Broadway by the Port Authority. So we would disappear and go our own ways and walk through the city.
By yourself?
And it was like, no, like three of us and four of them. And then I'd lose lead, but we all knew we had to be on 178th Street. And that became something else. And then I did that until I got the lung infection.
From the paraquat?
From the paraquat. That summer of 79, I was fucking, every 3 or 4 days, we were hitting that motherfucking THC crystal. And that became an acid addiction. So after I got, like when I got out of the doc, when I got out of the hospital September 28th, that became, because I was scared it was going to sit in my lungs, the powder from the thing would infect the paraquat. So I stopped snorting THC. And I got into my acid addiction. But I was into that angel dust for a couple of months. Then it stopped. But in New York City, it was rampant again in the mid-80s. So you would go into the city, and you would go to like anywhere from 116th up to like 119th Street on 3rd Avenue with the where the Puerto Rican neighborhoods are, all that stuff. And you would, and they're black neighborhoods. So who are you kidding? And I would meet people who sold nickel bags and dime bags of chocolate Thai weed, but they also sold trays of that angel dust. And basically a tray is a half a gram that you sprinkle on your joint. And then you roll your joint and hit it. So I went over there, and I went over there a couple times, and people would always go, dog, add that tray to that motherfucker. The tray was like the supersize. With the supersizes at McDonald's, like when you go to McDonald's, they're like, hey, what do you want to do? You want to do this or you want to do the fucking boner? Yeah, supersize me. So for another $3, you not only smoke great weed, but now you're going to see the fucking devil. That's what angel dust.
So you both like to go really fast off of weed and maybe angel dust, and then you like to go really slow too, right? With weed.
Well, the angel dust slows you.
You said it was like a sleeping pill.
It was a sleeping pill that has heart to it.
Yeah,
it's like a sleeping pill with heart. You know, you're not gonna go to sleep.
Things never said before.
You're not gonna nod, but you're gonna be like, yeah, man, and everything flashes. I remember having conversations on it. But then, in 83, I went over to the city on a Monday, and it was raining. And at that time, I was a runner for a numbers bank. There was a numbers bank on like 119th, 18th. The guy's still around. The father is in Puerto Rico. They stopped. They were huge. But as the lotteries took in, the numbers in New York shrunk. It became a one-man operation. I could go to New York now and probably make 100 grand a year doing numbers. But it's a one-man operation. I got to have another guy come in and help me and run errands or something. But I could sit on the phones all day. I could sit in a bodega shop. So my job was to help this guy. And he'd give me like $1.20, $1.40 a day. If nobody hit the number, he'd give me $200. And it was great for me because I got to go into the city, pick up money, and then I would pick up drugs on the way back. I couldn't lose. I'd pick up a gram of blow and a fucking 20 of weed.
Did you ever nod? I just saw this video of this woman who was just passed out while standing up in the street of New York, and it blew my mind. Like, did you ever do that where you just like couldn't?
I loved it. I love seeing people nod. I only nodded, honestly, I only nodded one time.
When
I got high on the heroin in Gunther Brown's house. And I told the story, and people hated me because I told the story. They were like, you don't trip on the heroin. I didn't trip. I never said I tripped. I said in my fucking dilemma, in my dreams, I saw this fucking nun. That's what I told the story, and people got pissed off at me. But that's the only time I really...
They wanted you to get your drug facts straight?
Yeah, I think I nodded. I got sick. You know, I got heroin sick.
Yeah.
When you do heroin, you get sick. Like, you get sick, and that's when the heroin kicks you.
Fuck.
So you do a line, puke, blah, and after you puke, now is when... You're ready.
Oh, really? So that you go off?
Yeah, once you puke, you're like, oh,
well, yeah, they said that in Breaking Bad, but fuck.
I don't like needles, no. So I'm happy I never did.
That's me too. Saved me completely. If God would love me to have needles, I wouldn't be here having this conversation with you guys.
Is that a bathroom right there?
No, I have a key for it.
Has anyone ever gone to the bathroom on the podcast before?
No, go ahead. You got to go.
I got to piss, man.
I'm going to put on fucking I Want to Be Around, so okay. It's perfect.
It's just. I've been like, I don't want to end it, but man, I'm getting old.
I know it happens. It happens. It happens to me all the fucking time. I gotta pee all the. I can't believe you got this angel dust today, Lisa. What's happened? You like angel? You want to try?
Not even a little bit.
Good for you. That's why I love you. You're always smart. You learn.
I wanna be around.
Ready for another Goomy?
No.
We got two left. Let's
pick
up
the pieces. No, thank you.
If we don't kill these two, you're gonna have to eat a whole one.
I'm gonna have to eat that anyways.
Goomies are monos in the house.
Yeah, they made them less strong, right?
Yeah.
Well, oh, you lied to me. They're just small.
Put on love.
Somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me.
What's up, cocksucker? How you doing?
I'm all right.
We had a nice time with Ray Cannella.
He's the nicest guy in the world.
He's called into the podcast twice. He's the guy that worked at Sci-Fi. And he's got Screambox now.
Yeah.
How much is it a month?
$4.
$4 a month, unlimited horror
on
movies.
Roku. And they have a website.
Great fucking kid, man. I've known him. We had a band in the sixth grade. He was in town doing a bunch of business until Lee and I took him out to lunch, and a fucking great lunch.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
I haven't had pasta in months. And I was
How many calories did you write down? I wrote down like 1,100, I think.
No, I didn't think it was that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad.
Because, all right, I'll tell you exactly what I did.
I forgot to write down the cannoli, but
I wrote down the cannoli wasn't bad either, because we each had a half.
Yeah, we did it right today. Went for a fucking great lunch today.
So yeah, the what it has in the app is chicken parm was $3.21. I had a cup of spaghetti for like $2.10. Marinara was like 80 calories, and a half a cannoli was $1.10. And you don't know if that's right because you're eating out, but that's what the app says. So that's like $700.
Their app or your app?
MyFitnessPal.
And it says Mazzarino's?
No. They don't have. They do have some restaurants, like some of the bigger ones.
Right. They do have the bigger ones.
Nutrition information they do. But, I mean, it's a good guess. And I had a small dinner, so. I stayed within my calories today. We'll see what happens tonight, but fuck. You know, he gives me this stuff, and I'll go home and eat everything.
Guys, we went to this Italian place today.
Oh.
It's been there for 30 years. I kept hearing about it. Jimmy Schubert kept telling me. We went there for lunch one day, and I'm like, this is tremendous. $10.95. You get spaghetti, meatballs, chicken parmesan.
A salad.
And a salad.
Wow.
And a fucking drink.
It's a good deal.
And garlic bread.
Yeah.
For lunch. And it's fast, you know? We went in there. We went in there a couple times. And one night, me and my wife, let's go in there. Boom. Closed. It closed. Something happened. Then they reopened it. So today, we're going to take him to Domingo's for a sandwich. He lives in Lodi, New Jersey. Where the fuck am I going to take him? So I'm like, let's take him to Mazzarino's because now it's 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And it was, I mean, everybody raved about the meal, including him. And he lives in Jersey. He was like, the cannoli was great. The sausage was great. The fucking, he was torturing the fucking Gentiles. He kept telling the guy, give me the little sausage. The guy's like, what was that? A little sausage. I don't understand what you're saying. Sausage, you fuck. Sausage, you fucking cock. What's up, Lisa? Yeah.
No, they had a fucked up weekend at John's.
Who
at the supermarket.
Oh, you got hit again.
That's I got hit again, which was
why
crazy.
Why did you go to John's? That's where immigrants go.
It's right
go.
Next to my house. We just needed help.
That's where immigrants go. You got to go to Ralph's.
It's right
you
next,
white fucking
it's right next to my
together.
House. And her mom needed some like Mexican stuff for enchiladas. But
Jew that, enchiladas?
Not Jew. Mexican. They're really good.
Oh, so you're dating a Jew?
No,
I mean
Mexican.
A Mexican?
Yeah. It's been
Jew-Mexican kids? You going to have a Jew-Mexican kid?
In a few years. Not for a while. But the fucked up thing that happened, and I wanted to know if it happened to you. We went to a place for dinner, and immediately I felt like I had to take a shit, and I almost shit my pants in John's. Like, it got was at the point where you had to take like one step and stop for 30 seconds.
That means don't go back to that restaurant.
And then I started laughing, and I almost came out, but I actually made it to the bathroom. Have you ever shit in like a public place in front of like your wife or something?
Not in front of them, but I usually run in there. I shit the other day in the airport, but I don't shit with regular people. I shit in the handicap bathroom.
No.
Oh, yeah, because
that little
clean.
One that's singular, it's singular. No. I'm not talking about the handicap bathroom in the big bathroom.
Yeah.
At airports, they have a family bathroom. You take your kids with diapers.
Bless you. But no, I mean,
salute, coño.
I mean, have you actually like pooped your pants?
Have I pooped my pants? Never.
Ever in your life? Never.
Oh,
once?
I've shit my pants, please. Oh. Oh, yeah. You go to fart by mistake and
oh,
something
yeah.
comes out. You got to like double check.
And it just comes out. You're like, oh, my God. I just shit my pants.
No,
it almost
terrible.
Happened in the grocery store.
No, it happens sometimes.
What'd you do? You just Kegel with your asshole and just
yeah,
make a
I
quick
just made
fucking...
a run for it, but the bathroom there was disgusting, but I had to do what
yeah,
I
sometimes
do.
It's either like, either put my ass on some dirty fucking, some fucking dirty marble or shit my pants. And you're like, I'm just going to take whatever that bull's got at this
point. I don't even play sometimes. Like, if I really have to go to bed, I just start looking for a tree, a park.
Oh, the shit outdoors? You ever
I shit in
the park?
I shit in Mike Fabeman's yard one night.
What?
I did a gig with Mike Fabeman, like in Colt, like someplace 5 hours away. And the deal was he would pay for the rent. You know, he hooked up with a chick.
Yeah.
So he goes, take the car home and she'll drive me home tomorrow and I'll pay for the rental car. Just leave it in my yard. It was a 5 hour drive. They fed you really good. So 2 hours after the drive, you got to go to the bathroom. It's midnight.
Yeah.
Usually you're home by midnight, 1 o'clock. Oh, my God. I got into Hollywood like at 3:30 in the morning. There was not a soul on the street. I got to Feynman's backyard. I had to go. I just had to go.
Does he know this?
Yeah, I told him like a day later. He's like, I drove over it. What is wrong with you? Jesus Christ. Remember when he lived on Fairfax
yeah.
there? Right in the middle.
Where's
of
he live now?
I don't know. Somewhere in Hollywood.
I've never shit in the outdoors.
Oh, my God. In this house where I live, one day I went to get sushi. And sometimes you eat a little bit too much. All you can eat sushi and the rice just works its way into your stomach. And I had to go home. And I forgot my key. And I had to climb through my window. And, I mean, that time I went outside. Another time I went outside on the way back from a gig, a comedy gig at night. Because sometimes you do comedy, you get in the car, you look in the bathroom. You're like, it's too dirty. I'm not going to go in there. I'll make it home. You're not going to fucking make it home.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I piss
outdoors all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's all the time.
I'll find a bush, be like,
I don't know. I'm afraid. That's nothing to me. You want to talk to me about peeing outside? You got nothing coming.
Do you ever get amazed, Joey? I don't know if you do, but I am blown away by how much people laugh at shit jokes. Like, it blows my mind. I have, like, a fucking murderous, almost shit my pants story that, like, murders. And it blows my mind how hard it murders.
Do you know why? I think because everybody is almost or shit their pants
yeah.
at a moment in their life. And it's really how you react to it and how you feel about yourself afterward. Because you really feel bad. You feel shitty. You know, you just feel...
It's embarrassing. You're like, I'm an adult.
Who am I going to tell? Your underwears, you just throw them away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no sense of scrubbing them out or shouting them out because, you know, it's just terrible.
Bleach stick to
It's just terrible. It really is an embarrassing thing. What's up, Lisa? Yeah, everything all right in your
Are you
world?
Baked, dude?
Oh, yeah.
No,
really
he ain't baked.
I was still high from earlier today, and you gave me another one.
San Francisco last week. You're really lucky, man. You're going to Sacramento.
I love that club.
What people don't realize is there's a lot of good, great comedy states. Like, there's a really good places where comedy has been a tradition for a long time. The Bay Area is one of those places.
Easily.
Northern California is one of those places. You know, Sacramento Punchline, those older clubs like that. You know, what's his name? Came out of Oakland. What's the kid that used to go to Comedy Store? A couple guys have come out of fucking Oakland. A couple big comics have come out of Oakland.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Yeah.
The white dude that died.
Robin Williams.
No.
He was a big Oakland comic.
Really?
Yeah. He used to perform in Oakland all the time.
There you go. I'm wrong, yeah. Something about Northern California.
What's his name now? Moshe Kasher is a guy who came out of San Francisco recently. There's a bunch of funny guys.
Yeah, no. And it just goes to show you that area,
Ellie
they
Wong.
Rejoice it. They rejoice it. They support it. They go out. You know, when I lived in San Francisco in 85, they had comedy clubs. Did I go? No. Did I dream of being a comic? Then no. But then years ago, you know, when I first got into comedy, there had to be 6 full-time clubs up there.
Boy, look at 15. Phoenix. Look at Phoenix, Arizona, dude. How many comedy clubs are going to be out there soon? They're opening a Laugh Factory. They got House of Comedy. They got Tempe Improv. They got
Stand Up Live.
They got Stand Up Scottsdale. I think there's – and, like, the House of Comedy is the only one that's kind of on its own area. All the rest of them are, like, within, like, a 5 square miles, there's, like, 5 comedy clubs. It's crazy, and they're all great clubs.
I hear the House of Comedy is a great club.
Gorgeous, dude. It's a gorgeous club. You go there like, whoa, this is like a good looking. And you know what? They did something smart. They made a regular size comedy club. Like all these new comedy clubs are open up. They're like, unless you're Gabriel Iglesias, like how are you going to pack this room? It's just like impossible. It's huge. But you know, this one's a good size club that would be, if you shot something there, it would look really good.
You know, I... always went to Cobb's with Rogan. He could put 400 people.
Easy, yeah.
But I did it last year with Ari, and we sold tickets with Ari last year. But I just wanted to be somewhere more intimate. So I chose the Punchline, and it was fucking tremendous.
I love that club.
It seats 180. Yeah, I like both Punchlines. I like all 3 of them. The problem is the one that went, I got to drive an hour to the airport on Sunday. I don't want to do that.
I'm doing the Laughing Skull.
The Laughing Skull. That's perfect.
It's 80 people.
Yeah, perfect.
That is perfect, that's man.
Listen, man, when you get into comedy, yeah, you have these dreams or whatever. Once you do them, I don't want to work theaters. I really don't. I really don't want to do more than 300 people, really more than 250. And it's got to be seated right, you know?
Right.
Like San Francisco, it's seated right. Even sitting at the bar, at the Punchline, is a great, comfortable seat, you know? I want everybody to be comfortable. I don't want people to be sitting next to people they don't fucking know. You know, there's clubs that put people at your table. You know, high, 4 high, and you sit there like, who the fuck are these fucking morons?
Yeah.
They do that in a lot of places.
Yeah, I don't want to sit next to nobody. Give me the fucking no. Give me the 4.
Do you like dark clubs or brighter crowds? I like them darkish because then people I find laugh louder when they're in a dark room. When the lights are bright and they can see each other, they're a little bit more nervous about laughing at some weird shit. At least that's what I've found.
Good for you. You know, listen, man. I hate when you work with a comic and you're ready to start the show, and a comic walks into the green room and starts his bullshit. I did a mic test, and you can't hear it in the back. It's cold in there. you know, the lights are too, and you're like, you're already killing yourself?
Yeah.
Before you're going on stage. So I didn't really want to answer that because I don't want young comics watching and listening to go, oh, yeah, that's the, no. Nothing else matters but the microphone, you and them. If they don't laugh, guess what? It's on you. Maybe your energy, oh, yeah, but the six comics before me sucked. So you should have fucking been good. Every excuse that you give yourself for not being funny on stage goes back to you. Plain and fucking simple. Not the audience, not the fucking microphone. You know, oh, well, I didn't know. Well, you should have fucking listened. But you were too busy listening to your bad fucking jokes. How do I know? Because I've done it myself. The fuck is wrong with these goddamn people?
Joey, you know, being a Comedy Store comic, that like there's a level of experience with chaos that you have a bunch of tools to deal with. Great story real quick. I just did a Vegas. I kind of had a couple days off in L.A., so I'm like, I want to sit around. I'm going to go do some spots out in Vegas because I'm blessed to have some friends who let me go up. I go out there. I do a couple great spots, L.A. Comedy Club, Sin City Show. And then I go do this show I've done a bunch of times called The Dirty at 1230, and it was started
tremendous.
By...
South Point by Ralphie May. Tremendous.
It's a great
I'm
show.
I'm doing it December 5th.
Oh, dude, I might have to go watch this.
No, let's all go, and then we'll all go on January 2nd. Me, Shapir, because we're doing a Mirage with Rogan in Vegas on a Friday night after New Year's. Why not? Let's just fucking get a cab and shoot over to the South Point at midnight. Then on Saturday after the UFC, they do another Dirty at 12:30 at a different fucking place.
Oh, yeah. They got a... at Mandolin Bay, I think.
Yeah, so, Gabe. Gabe is working hard.
Gabe Lopez. Quality dude.
Working hard, man.
So I do it. I show up. Brett Ernst is headlining the LA Comedy Club. So it's like we get the team back together. Sure. We have some fun. We go down and we do the Dirty at 12:30. This guy who's opening show is very cool. Edwin San Juan is the host. He's hosting, killing it. This guy named Scratch, this local guy, really funny dude out of Florida. He's doing it. He gets heckled by these dudes in the front row who turn out to be cops. These guys are cops in the front row. They have a night off. They're fucking heckling this guy right out the gate. I felt bad for him because he was like really excited to finally get to do the show, and he's like even kind of pacing the back going, I don't know why I'm nervous, you know, I've been doing this forever. I'm like, yeah, man, you're going to kill. So he goes up there. These guys jump him right out the gate. So he's dealing with that, and Scratch gets the crowd behind him, and everyone starts booing these dudes, and it's kind of cool. He deals with it, gets off stage. Dat Fan goes up, does Dat Fan, funny, really cool cat, does really well. I get up and I just start murdering people, right? I mean, I'm in the crowd. I'm yelling at someone's mom how I want to do cocaine out of her asshole. And the place is going fucking nuts, right? So it's great. I get off stage, man. I mean, I break this crowd open, you know? And it's Ernst's turn to go up. So as soon as I walk in the back and everyone's like, great set. All of a sudden I hear it go, oh, hey, let's go. What the fuck? In the back, the cops had gotten up and went after and started swinging on Scratch. Brett Ernst, Comedy Store, in the moment, starts doing play-by-play of the fight as it's going on. He doesn't even skip a beat. He just starts going John Madden and calling out the fight as people are fighting. And, dude, anybody else would have fucking ate a dog's dick on stage. You know, Comedy Store for fucking 15 years, in the moment, fucking starts doing play-by-play. The crowd's going crazy. They end the fight. I walk in. I start separating people. People go their own way. Brett, boom, hits a stride, fucking super crushing. Just dealing with the fucking moment. But anyway, and Dat Fan comes up, goes, you and fucking Ernst, you guys are fucking thick-skinned. You guys have been in store for so long. You guys could deal with all that fucking chaos. It's like, yeah, dude. I mean, I used to walk in the fucking 5 o'clock fires all the time at the Comedy Store when I got first picked up. I had to follow fucking you. Two of the biggest bombs of my life are following Lisa Lampanelli and this motherfucker in a Comedy Store. I mean, this guy's fucking flamethrowing the room. I go up and I got my shit and I think I know what I'm doing. I'm throwing punchlines into a fucking well and not hearing my lines hit at all. And I would have to follow him, Rogan, Dice, Eddie Griffin, night in, night out. And those dudes were doing like an hour. And I had to go up there and somehow keep the crowd in the fucking whole thing, man. And it was just like, it was so funny to watch Brett Ernst just handle this fucking crowd. It was so fucking funny.
Last week, I was watching. I'll tell the story. I don't give a fuck what happens because I'm just trying to prove a point here. And we're all gentlemen. We all understand this. Last week, Lee, were you on my house last Tuesday? We watched Sons of Anarchy.
No.
Somebody was over there eating. And I got, it was my wife's buddy. And I caught the end of it. And then they have a show afterward. And it's hosted by somebody from
Chelsea.
And
really?
I sat there and watched it. And after 8 or 9 minutes, I felt bad. I felt bad. And I didn't feel bad for him. I felt bad because he didn't have chops. Okay, he didn't have chops. You could go to ITT Tech, and you're probably going to be a good mechanic, and you're going to get a good education there. But unless you work at your father's gas station and take garbage out and get coffee and order parts, and there's a different zen to that. There's a thing called Gracie Combatives, where you go and you learn moves, but you don't really wrestle. That's great, and you'll be great under different situations. I can't last a round when I go to jiu-jitsu, but I do 3 of those. And I know someday, me doing that, it's mat time. It's called mat time. You know?
You're doing jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, for like 2 years. I'm terrible. I can't even fucking breathe. I didn't go today. I got busy this morning.
I want to start jiu-jitsu.
But with comedy, you know, you could go to all the grappling classes you fucking want. Okay, and I'll put this out there. If somebody wants to call me out or call me a jerk off or whatever, go be it. You want to go to I.O. and do all those classes, you could do what the fuck you do, and I wish you a lot of luck. But I tell you what, you ain't going to have the education I have in fucking comedy, because I got on a bus, and I went from coast to fucking coast on a bus, and I have witnesses that will come on this show and tell you I would leave L.A. in November and come back in April on a bus, and all that time I took 2 Southwest flights. You know what I'm saying? I would take 2 Southwest flights in that whole time. I would start and fucking on a plane to whatever, to a bus to El Paso, and then a plane from El Paso to Boston to New Hampshire, where nobody lands and it's cheap. In those days, you went to New Hampshire, and I'd take a bus in and fucking bus to Buffalo. I mean, come on. I lived on a fucking Greyhound. But it wasn't, I knew when I was doing it, and I'd call home and people were like, oh, I was rocking at the store the other night. Some girl was there sucking people's dick. Here I was in Michigan at Grand Rapids, where I would be in, like, I don't even know, Ishpeming or Traverse City, in a fucking Motel 6, working a VFW with 8 people in Traverse City. You have no fucking idea. And at that time, I was already at the store, but I had bombed in L.A. a couple times, and I'm like, this can't happen. I can't have this happen, you know, because in L.A., you're going to slip through. You're going to go to Laugh Factory and follow some cute guys, and you're going to be the hit over at the Grape Lounge on Melrose, where they laugh at yuck jokes. But then something's going to happen. You're going to go to the Improv to do one of those specialty shows, and you're going to have to get in between Sam Tripoli and Nick DiPaolo. Okay, so Sam Tripoli isn't at every Improv every week, and there's no pictures of him hanging out with Chelsea lately, but he's a fucking badass comic. And he's probably going to have 11 minutes, which means he's going to sizzle the room harder than you've ever seen a room getting sizzled. Because you were headlining your hometown club or something. You were headlining after 2 years. You went to Montreal. You know, they loved you. You know, they love you on Comedy Central. And you walk into that Improv on a Saturday night in front of 200 people, and you have to follow this killer from Manila and then get sandwiched in between Nick DiPaolo. Because at first you'll go, so I couldn't follow Tripoli. But fuck Tripoli. He was dirty. You're going to make up an excuse.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell your agent, he talked to the crowd. You know, whatever fucking mind fuck. You'd be surprised the mind fuck they tell themselves. And then you're going to watch Nick DiPaolo go up there. And whatever he did to the room, Nick DiPaolo's going to take that room and sandwich it in half, spit on it, piss on it, and light it on fire. Because it's 20 years of experience, and you're not going to replace
that
with your 4 years at I.O. Well, I was in college. I was at I.O., and I was the most likely to succeed at Improv West. That's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it. And I knew that. I knew I had come off of 6 years of working hard, doing triple runs, Mormon rooms, where they switch up the rules on you, Seattle, you know, Portland, the Tri-Cities. I was bombing in Colorado for 2 years. When I got to L.A., I thought, first off, you lose 10 minutes from your area jokes.
Yeah.
Because if you move from Arizona, those jokes aren't going to work in the main room. At first, you say them. And you learn the hard way. You're like, yeah. So the judge in Arizona, they're like, this is Los Angeles, bitch. We don't know what the fuck you're talking about. It's a hell, and I'm very proud that I have those chops. And you'll never take them away from me. Can't take them away from you.
I've always said that, man. It's like, I have this issue with some bookers. I'm very blessed that some bookers like me, but there's some bookers that just have just weird things. And it's such an interesting thing to see a booker who acts like they decide everything and they pick, oh, I don't like him, I don't like that. And I'm like, you know what, man? I'm just going to wait it out. Because in 2 years, you'll probably be gone. Most likely, if you're calling, being like that, X-ing out these people, only letting these people, eventually it's going to catch up with you and you're gone. Sometimes you get some good people like Molly from the Punchline, has been around for a while. She's funny and she's cool. She seems to let a wide range of people play those clubs. But I've met these fucking dickhead fucking, these bookers on there who just have like a certain view of comedy. And if you don't fit into that, you never get to work their club. And I'm just like, I'll just wait 2 years. You'll be gone. And then the next person will fucking let me in. I've seen it happen 1,000 times before. It's just an interesting thing when somebody's a booker. There's a lot of power. But once it's gone, that power's all gone. It's just gone.
Gone.
Nothing. And you got no tangible skill. You know, which, like, if I say you can never play this club again, that's fine. You got skills. You go play another club and make magic happen. It's just such an interesting thing. It's such a power play that is so fleeting.
I remember there was a couple of bookers that used to talk shit about Joe bringing me and Ari on the road. And I remember, like, I busted one's balls in San Francisco. He doesn't exist. It's amazing the people, and I got to tell you something. I've never had respect for authority, just especially in a semi-corporate, because right now it's very corporate, no matter what you get into. When I was starting comedy and I was looking for a job, it was still semi-corporate, you know, and I've never had respect for a lot of that level. I don't know why. I just never did, because we're the ones that are out there busting our humps. And you're walking around in a suit and people fear you. Yeah, when Joe comes in, make sure you're sitting at the computer. It's so typical how they act.
It's fake.
It's fake. It's so typical, and we put this fake fear up. That's what I hated. I don't fear anybody. I fear myself now. I fear myself if I don't write or if I don't fucking whatever, but it's in that work thing. You get this fear. And these guys, these bookers had that same, like, I'm better than everybody here.
They, yeah, it's weird, way, right?
And comics give them coffee, and then they're very cool, and they all disappeared. You know, Mark Babbitt was doing a great job in Houston. He became the end-all, be-all. He's gone. You know, these guys come and go. Sarah Nye was one of the biggest wenches you ever met in your life. She booked Cleveland and Buffalo and Miami Improv. So she would run you through the mill. She'd give you, if she didn't like you, she'd give you Buffalo and Cleveland in January back-to-back. And then she'd go, call me from Miami. And she wouldn't take your calls for a year. Then she'd try to give you Buffalo, and you'd have to stick up for yourself and go, hey, what happened to that Miami day? And then she'd give it to you. It was amazing how she treated me. And I'll never forget those people. Like, I never, ever forgotten them. And I wish that they turned the TV on and saw me by mistake or something. Not that I was better than them, but I did something with myself. Where the fuck are they now?
That's what I'm saying.
They're selling real estate now. Yeah. Or they're sucking somebody's dick. You know, they're not doing nothing creatively with their life. I never understood how non-creative people could judge creative people.
Well, that's this whole town, dude.
That's the fucking thing. There's a big difference between you being a creative person and understanding the genre that's going on than you going to Emerson College. And I told you that. When we hooked up, I said that to you. And you looked at me with the camera. I go, I don't want you using the same shit they taught you at Emerson College. No disrespect. I want you to use what you want to use. I said, let's use something that we don't look like what everybody else is doing. I don't give a fuck if you need the romantic interest in a film to make it happen. If the film doesn't call for a romantic interest, it just makes the film clunky. Your formula is not going to work forever. And I'll take an example of what genre, and we're all going to agree on it. Podcasting.
Yeah.
Podcasting, if you're a manager today or an agent, and I come to you and I go, I'm not going in for that audition. My podcast is on fire. They don't understand. They don't understand that this catches on daily. This is something that people are sick and tired of hearing bullshit. They're sick and tired of hearing the weather when they don't want to hear it. We have a friend that is very interesting. He worked for Sci-Fi. He got laid off. But he enjoyed the layoff because he saw the death of cable coming anyway. He talked to his kids. He would see what his kids were doing. And he would say, won't you kids watch cable? No, no, we're watching Roku or Hulu and all this shit.
Hulu, Netflix, all
and,
that shit.
And he quit, and now he opened up his own station. It's a horror station. And some people get it, and some people don't get it. You know, the networks, they give clunky comedian specials. Here there's guys that are out there proving themselves that should have been on TV 5 years ago, but the networks and the networks executives fall in love with a certain type, and they'll go with it to the end, and you see it. It's a bombing.
And the,
it's a dog with fleas. This kid doesn't have the chops. You never developed this kid. You didn't make America fall in love with him before you put him on TV. There's no creativity anymore. Everything is a piece of paper. There's no creativity. If I give Lee Syatt a deal at CBS to develop a show, and I give you $100,000 to develop a show, and I put you with Sam Tripoli to develop a show, and I believe in you that much, the first thing I'm doing is calling the executive producers from Two and a Half Men and going, hey, Lee Syatt is doing 3 guest spots on your show. Who the fuck is Lee? Don't you fucking work. Who the fuck do you think you're fucking talking to? L-E-E-S-Y-A-T-T. That's it. Okay? Get Elaine on the phone and tell her I'm setting up a meeting for him to go down there. Talk to the kid. He's a stand-up. Grab a pen. He's going to be at the improv. Melrose, you fuck. What improv? You work at CBS. What fucking improv do you think? Melrose is going to be at the Comedy Store 11:30. Somebody go see him and get back to me. Bye. That's what you do. And you write him into the hit shows. You write him into that show. You write him into somebody else's show. So when people see you in the commercial in 6 months, what they do with Mulaney? How many shows did they put Mulaney on? How many? How many shows did they put Christelle on when her show got picked up?
None.
They should have had Christelle on. No, but who are they? They're going to have that fucking skank that killed the singer from Nirvana with that pussy. What's her name?
Courtney Love?
Courtney Love. They got her on Sons of Anarchy, wasting time.
Really?
That's the bitch that killed the drummer from Nirvana, the whatever his fucking name is. God bless
Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, she's the one. You think people, oh, he killed himself because of drugs. No, he killed himself because he smelled a snatch. That's why it smelled like fucking death. It smelled like fucking Seattle vomit. That's why.
Yeah, dude.
And they're giving her TV spots, but they're wasting your time. You got Cristela Alonso fighting for her life, a Mexican fat chick with a fucking dangly tooth. Hanging there on ABC on Friday nights, it's going to fucking do well. Gabriel's on the show with her.
Yeah.
And they didn't put her on anything else. They don't know dick. They're not fucking creative. It's just people pushing buttons.
They're suits,
doing,
dude. They're yes
doing
people.
Doing what they're doing.
Who just move their way up. And it just sucks. And it's unnecessary because, you know, for me personally, it's like my life, my career. I've done well with everybody, but this one group of people, these fucking suits, who are gamblers. That's all suits are gamblers. Are they gamble? They want to gamble on you. They don't want to gamble on you. So, but they keep gambling on the same person, even though that thing never works out. Well, but the guy who does it all the time, they don't want. Because you know what else, Joey? As much as we want to make it, there's the suits out there. They want to be like, I have the magic eye. I discovered this thing. So, like, if I go, I got Joey Diaz here, this, and you're killing it. Let's just say, fictitiously, you're the guy you are, but without the heat. I'm like, oh, this Joey Diaz, people love him. He's huge. Nobody wants to be like, oh, yeah, let's go with him. Let's go with this kid that no one knows so they can be like, look who I discovered.
Let's work our way backwards instead of, it's very weird that you think that they had a lot more common sense. You said something before. You said these comedy clubs keep building. They're making them bigger and bigger and bigger. And we go play there, and we wish that we could fill 600 seats. I mean, that's the dream. But then when you get there, guess what, folks? 600 seats in a room is an awkward fucking room. After 500, it becomes a theater. And if it isn't a theater, don't try to sell it. If it ain't a chicken, don't tell me it's a fucking rooster. You know what I'm saying? That, you follow me?
100%.
So for a comic, it's very awkward to perform in those places. I know it is for me. So that's why I was saying before, yeah, Joey, but you can make so much money. You know what? I'd rather feel comfortable. I'd rather you leave like you heard every word. I want you to see me from every angle, you know, so you can see me scratching my balls. Look at him. He's got a stain on his dick from his peanut. He didn't wash his helmet. Oh, he's got syphilis. Something. I want you to see my skin all fucked up. I want you to see the piece of meat in my tooth. I'm a normal fucking
guy. Want the intimacy, of what's supposed to happen in comedy.
I'd rather replace the Do-Re-Mi for the intimacy. I'd rather do an extra show than sit there and the people in the back.
And you got to do, when you do a theater, it's a different kind of delivery. You got to drop your punchline, wait for the laughs to go all the way to the back, come all the way front, and then you go to your next. Like, you ever have a bit where it's like, tag, 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 tag? Those are really hard bits to do in theaters because.
Right. Because no, people. Timing. Yeah,
no, the timing's off. So they laugh really hard. You wait a second, you drop it again, and it just doesn't have the same timing.
I bomb at all those Joe Rogan theaters.
No way,
oh,
Joey
my
Diaz.
God. I go
You're
up first.
Fucked. I love Listen you to death. Me. You're crazy.
First. I go up first. I go up first, and nobody gets a patois of the timing. And I tell you what, man, I'll step on my punchlines. And unless the sound is very good, like the Mirage, the sound is world class, where we do the show where they do the Lion King in Vegas, where he used to do that theater, the sound is good. But I could put five theaters where I would go out there and bomb. I remember bombing for like four theaters in a row. We would laugh about it. And then Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a theater that is perfect. The only problem with it is 1,200 people.
Oh.
But if you saw it, you'd go, oh, yeah, this is where I'm shooting my HBO special. It's all over. It's all over. Because once you, there's rooms that you go into that you get excited about. There's rooms like, because of the structure of the original room, that's the structure where I work the best.
Yeah.
Because I could close my eyes and visualize myself in that structure. You know, I was having struggling. I always go to San Francisco and I struggle. Sometimes
when
people
come
in, I don't
see that ever happen.
I feel a struggle. Friday, Saturday early show, I blew it up like I haven't blown it up in a long time. The last time I went to Frisco, I ate Death Thursday, two shows Friday, and the early show Saturday. But the late show Saturday,
yeah,
I took it to a different level. A switch goes off. I have a fear. There's a fear I have, and once I'm at a level, yeah, I'm getting laughs. You've been there. When you've walked off stage and by the common eye, you've gotten laughs. Yeah, we all could do that. We're doing it 15 fucking years. I'm talking about that rhythm. I'm talking about the unity of laughter.
Yeah, I get
it. I'm talking about the jokes, the whole thing. Even nights when your timing is on, it wasn't together.
Yeah.
So I'm doing something wrong. It's my body language. It's my energy. I'm not scratching my balls. I'm not cursing. I'm not doing something wrong because they're not feeling it.
Yeah,
this
I
is
understand
all,
this that.
Is, comedy is a lot more than going up there and telling fucking jokes. When you see Kevin Hart, he's killing. His energy is on. His aura is on. You know, his material's on. It's six things. There's nights I go up there, and to us, Joey's on, but the Joey trips. Come on, you.
I get it, dude.
And you go, you know, that wasn't really me. And they come up to you. This is the best I've ever seen you. And you're like looking at this person, going, "You're fucking retarded."
Yeah.
I've had way better sets that were technical. They were
following
more.
You in San Jose was an education, dude. I followed this dude. Following Joey Diaz at a Joe Rogan show is like middling for Van Halen, but David Lee Roth is the opening act, you know? Because this motherfucker goes up there and does 10 minutes of just the most well-written ass-eating material I've ever heard in my life. And I'm just going through the Rolodex going, what am I going to do that's going to follow this? And I got my head. And for the first show, I can be honest with you, it didn't go well. Because psychologically, I beat myself up. Which is always the only time I don't have a good set is when I psychologically beat myself up. Second show, it went great, and I said, "Fuck it, what do I got to lose here?" But, dude, you're a monster, dude. You're a guy I don't have to gear up for a lot of people, but I'm like, who am I following? Okay, Diaz. Okay, I have to go San Francisco 49ers, where I have to fucking script my first 15 plays because I gotta follow. I gotta let the jokes get me through when maybe my mentality isn't there like it should be. Anybody else, it's like flamethrower, flamethrower, flamethrower. Following Joey Diaz, man, we gotta script this shit.
It's crazy how I have a blue collar. It's because, you know, you want to say, yeah, it's because of the Comedy Store original room. But it's so many fucking rooms that for me to get that style, I love doing 20 minutes. Let's get that out of the way. Give me a light at 18.
And you get off quick, man. You get a light at 18, you're off at 20. Nobody else does that.
And you really want to rock this motherfucker? Let's do 12. Give me a light at 10. I guarantee I'll break one of these fucking bulbs just from the heat. One of these bulbs. I love all that shit. That's, I love it. And it's weird that I could do any dimension of time. You know, I love doing 6 minutes. Oh. 6 minutes? Oh. 3 minutes? Oh. Where that's, a lot of people can't.
Are you even doing jokes at 3 minutes? Or are you just like torturing the
crowd?
It's
energy. It's just a burst of energy. But that 3 minutes also taught me how to audition. Do you follow me? How it goes hand in hand. So when you're in Seattle and you're an open mic and you're going, I can't do nothing in 3 minutes. Mitzi Shore used to give you 3 minutes. 3 fucking minutes. You had 3 minutes to make it or break it. So you really got to be tuned up. Those 3 minutes, that goes back to auditioning. So now you think you were polishing up your stand-up and you were questioning it. Don't fucking question that. But that's something you won't know if you went to Groundlings. That's something you won't know if you went to IO, if you took a stand-up course from somebody and started fucking around. These are the things you'll never know. It took me 6 years to get the courage to come to Los Angeles. Not because I thought I was good. I never thought I'd end up doing shit because Stanhope talked me into it. And I had 2 years of fluff time. And in those 2 years of fluff time, I picked up a movie, a pilot. So they pay attention. Even though he sucks, they pay attention. Now you have to, God bless you, look, I ain't lying. Even though I suck, they had to pay attention. And eventually the pieces come together and then you grow on that. And that's what we're discussing here. That's what it's all about. You know, sometimes you don't come here. You're not the funniest guy. But you come, you look, you see what you got to do, and you set your dream in motion. And even though you put your hooks in here, you go on the road in between, you do 6 fucking tough weeks. I remember Mitzi passed me on a Sunday, and I was supposed to leave that Tuesday for San Ramon. I canceled. I'm not leaving on her because she'd forget your fucking name.
Yeah.
That Monday, I was the first motherfucker calling. I went to a spot, boom. And I stayed here for 5 or 6 weeks, canceled everything. I made sure I made an impact. And sure enough, I got into a fist fight the second night as she was walking in. Bam, there you go. Who's this dude? Bam, throwing punches up here his second night and shit.
She loved chaos, dude. She loved chaos. You know, being a comedian so interesting because it's like it's really like some karate master shit in that you got your dojo, your home club, you work your comedy, and then the key is to go on the road and fight other karate masters. Like, you just go into other cities, and you got to see if your kung fu works there, if your kung fu works over here. I always used to love that. It's like, okay, can I rock this room? Back when I first started doing comedy, because I went straight to headliner, dude, and it really hurt my career.
Mm-hmm.
I hurt my fucking career.
Absolutely.
I never got to watch how a headliner operates. I went straight to headliner, and I had to learn the hard way. And I kind of got all these gigs, and they kind of went away. And then I just started just working, and I just started watching. And then, you know, Rogan took me on the road sometimes. I got to watch how he worked and just how you do with the show. And I got to watch Maz Jobrani work, you know, and just, like, the ebb and flow of being a headliner. And, like, it took me a little while to realize that because I used to want to go in there power set and do, like, a fucking 45 of fire. And you just can't do a 45 of fire. You got to kill for a little while, give them a chance to breathe, take a breath, reset, kill for a little while. Take a breath. Uh-oh, here come the checks. Checks drop. Okay, I got to fucking keep these guys' attention or else it's going to sound like I'm bombing right now. How do you deal with check drops? And then, like, the big closer and all that stuff. It's psychological how you headline it.
How long have you been doing comedy for now?
Almost 20 years, dude.
Okay, so it's weird that I've been doing comedy 23 years, and I just really started headlining 3 years ago.
Really?
I always headlined, but do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like I became a headliner 3 years ago. Like, I just stumbled on it. Like, I had been headlining since 7 years, since I got here. My first manager, Ken Phillips, he'd get me on creative runs as a headliner. I had 40 minutes. That's stretching it. That's if the audience talked back to me. Now I had to do 45. I bombed every night. But to become a headline, you got to bomb as a headline. You bomb. And so what about if you bomb in Clark, Tennessee, or West Virginia? You bomb, and then I don't like you anyway because you don't have a guitar and a banjo and a fucking hat on. So, but that makes... It's amazing how you grow with the art and how you look back and go, oh, my God, I was horrible at 7 years. And I was walking around the Comedy Store. In my mind, I was horrible. I'm horrible now, so I can't imagine what I was doing at being a comic at 7 years. And I was already at the store fucking walking around, you know, bombing, but following Mooney, following Eddie Griffin, following Dice, following Saget, following, you know. You're in there. You're in the fucking trenches. Yeah. And then you're in the trenches for 2 weeks and you're on the road for three. Then you're in the trenches for two. So you're learning how to bob and weave at different state to state. Lee, wake up. Look at you, cocksucker. It was 10 milligrams. Let me give some shout-outs here. Hold on 1 second. 10 fucking milligrams. You ain't doing that.
That's not true.
Martinell, you know I love you. God bless you, cocksucker. Joey B., Andy Scott. Rob, the mailman in Connecticut, you bad motherfucker. Keep delivering that shit. Scott Vaughn and my main man, Billy Welsh. You know, I forgot all about that. That you're Armenian by trade?
By birth.
By birth. And you went on the road with the Axis of Evil tour?
I used to, when we first started, how I got picked up at the Comedy Store, Duncan Trussell was the booker at the time, and Almaz Gibrani was a really good friend of mine, and they both called me up. They're like, listen, we got a way to get you at the store. Mitzi wants to do a Middle Eastern show. Before 9/11, she came up with this idea a year before, and she's like, I want to do a Middle Eastern show. They're like, she's like, just do a joke about being one joke about your mother, one joke about being Armenian, and one joke that you love. So I did a joke, and I remember you liked this joke back in the day. It was about Asians on ecstasy. I don't know if you ever remember that joke. I remember I did it, and Joey Diaz goes, dude, that's a funny fucking joke. And I was like, okay, it's Diaz certified. I used to really, I still love you, but I always had a lot of love for you,
the
man.
The funniest thing that I remember, that why I fell in love with Tripoli, because you meet people at the store, and then you judge them next by their worth ethic. Now they come over, they give you a blast of coke, and you're like, this guy's all right. You have a drink with them, maybe he gives you a ride home, you borrow $40. Mm-hmm. But then you like this about somebody. When you're a comic, especially for me, I like this about you. Okay, so he's okay. But then after a while, if I'd see you on stage bombing or whatever, then you stop. That kind of goes away. I don't mind if somebody bombs, because I bomb, but you got to have heart. There's something about heart that I've always been attracted to. I don't give a fuck if you got money or car. That shit don't. If you don't have heart, I can't hang with you. There's people, and you got to test them just to see if they got heart. And sometimes they disappear and you feel bad, but some motherfuckers are like, I got heart, dog, and this is what I'm going to do. And you got in, and we were mutual friends from Pablo. You know, we both knew Pablo.
He gave me a car they won in a fucking poker game. My first car in L.A.
A car.
Car, because the car that I drove out from Vegas, the engine had exploded on the drive out. So I had no fucking car. Pablo and Rita were like, baby, he's got a car for you. Do you want a car? And he's like, how much you want to pay for me? It's like, I got no money. He's like, okay, keep it. So that's who Pablo was, man. He would give you a fucking car they won in a poker game.
So it was crazy. He got into the store. And one night, you know, when you walked...
Great story about that car too.
When you walk into the store, when you check in, let's say you have an original room spot, you check in with the original. When you're a young barracuda, because when you get into the store first, you're a nervous little faggot. Your first year, you're a nervous. It takes you about 8 months to somebody challenge you emotionally or something, and then after that, you become a barracuda. What's a barracuda? You can't wait to get to the store. You just can't fucking wait. Like, you live it, you dream it, your dick gets hard, you sleep upside down at night. There's something about the store, your first 8 months. And then after that, you can't not be away from that place. It becomes an addiction, which means if your spot's at 11:45, you will be there at 9:15 on a Friday and Saturday. Because you never know. You might catch a fall on the fucking main room for hustling. Just for hustling. You might walk in and go, hey, man, I'm Joey. You here? Can you go up next? If Dave Tyree don't come, you're in the main room, right?
Totally.
You just made $125 for going, $130. So you would, I walk back there. I check in. As I'm checking in, you would walk around the back. You'd go to the male bathroom, boom, and into the back, and whoever was working, hey, what's happening? Listen, there's a fallout. I'm here. I'll let you know as I'm coming to the stage, Sam Tripoli. So as I walk back, and all of a sudden he starts doing my favorite joke. Sam Tripoli didn't know that it was 9:40, 10:15. She put him up by mistake early, and it was... The main room is for certain people at 9 o'clock.
100%.
From 9 to 10:30, it's for certain people. Then 55 will leave and 40 will come in, and that's your crowd. Comedy Store works for people that are going. You're like, well, how the fuck do we sit there from 9 to 12? Nobody sits there from 9 to 12.
Right.
People come at 9 and leave at 10:15 because they want to go somewhere else. And then another hand come in at 11, and that's your audience. Well, he caught the 9 o'clock crowd. And he's up there doing the Asian and ecstasy joke, and they're not going. But he don't give a fuck. He doesn't get. We don't give a fuck. When you start, you have this belief. You're in the main room. You don't give a fuck whether the joke is working or not. You don't stop the joke. You keep fucking dabbing it out. You keep throwing punches. And he's up there, and I'm by the corner because I'm admiring him. I'm like, what this cat don't know is these people are 80 fucking years old. And he's just throwing daggers at him. And he worked himself out of it or whatever. And that's when I fell in love with Sam Tripoli. Because he got himself out of a hole, not knowing. He was so young, he thought the Asian joke was going to work in front of everybody. They didn't know what ecstasy was. I didn't know what ecstasy fucking was. You know, you follow me? So if I just caught it, because my world was cocaine. But he's doing this ecstasy joke in front of these people. But he just believed in himself. And that's when you respect people.
I had a philosophy very early, and it was when it comes to stand-up, my will to kill is stronger than their will not to laugh. Like, I am going to get this show going. At some point, I'll throw a couple out, nothing. Then I'll start calling them out on the shit, and I'm going to crack it. Sometimes I don't, but the will to kill has always been stronger than their will just to stare at me. My first spot at the Comedy Store, first time ever, was following Charles Fleischer at... You know, back when he was doing like an hour, and I didn't know any better. I didn't know who that guy was.
What year was this?
I have to say it's like 2000, dude. 2000, I just got picked up.
Now, we did the dirty thing at the pool with the naked women. You were there with us?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, then you weren't there with us. Teeb was there. Teeb just told me recently he was there. And somebody found the tape on YouTube, the porno we did. It wasn't a sex porno. We did comedy. At a pool party where women were naked. It was a copycat to Girls Gone Wild.
Oh, I wish.
These poor bastards took a bath. They were telling us how they invested $100,000 and they had TV spots and they had a plan from A to Z how they were going to fucking sell the TV spots, and that's how they were going to sell these tapes that they estimated a certain amount. They get their money back, and then they paid us okay for the day, but then they would send us more money in the mail. These guys, the whole fucking thing bombed. But I thought you were one of the guys. I forget who was there. I think it was Maz, Mike Young.
Oh, what? No. I'm thinking the Maz gig. They hooked me up with doing this big Persian show in this fucking mansion in the hills that paid well. But no, this was something else. I did Chocolate Sundays. You ever done Chocolate Sundays? I did the big DVD. And the whole deal was, once we sell this, we'll pay you. And, like, I was like, oh, that sounds shady. But I'd gone to Montreal and bombed. And all I wanted was revenge. I wanted to show the world that what happened up there. Because I didn't even know what I was going into. I didn't even know what Montreal was. I was this kid from the Vegas comedy scene, which was like this sleeper cell of a comedy scene. It literally had no connection to the rest of the world. It was just like we grew up in our own little environment playing bar gigs. I had no clue what the fuck I was doing. I go up there, I bomb, because in my audition I tapped into something that I understand now, but I didn't know then. I just tapped into it, and I flamethrowed the room, but I didn't know how to get it back. And I go up to Montreal, and I bomb. They put me up after, who is the fucking funny black comic? Oh, fuck, I can't remember the name, but he murders. Now, I would follow it, not even think twice about it. Then it was just, I went up there and I bombed. And for the rest of like the next 3 years, I just was like a fucking samurai just going around exacting revenge on people I thought wronged me. So I get a chance to like, hey, you want to do this fucking chocolate sundaes? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do chocolate sundaes. I had to follow Cat Williams. But I was so crazy back then and didn't give a fuck. I went up there and flamethrowed this fucking room. And now I watch that DVD and I'm watching Cat Williams. I'm like, this motherfucker is murdering the room. How the fuck did I follow that guy?
It's amazing.
And I fucking follow him. Well, like, I did that literally 10, 11 years ago. They sent me a check a year ago. Here's the money we promised you. I'm like, and I totally needed it. I'm like, unbelievable. They really sold it and they paid out like they had promised. Like a fucking gentleman, dude. And I got the check. I'm like, oh, I need this so badly. I cashed it. Fucking kept straight, dude. I'm like, Pookie, you're a good man, dude. That's honorable shit to pay out on shit. You
didn't even have. Pookie?
What's that?
Pookie's still around?
Yeah, he still runs the show. You ever hear the time where he fucking tried to knock out Eddie Griffin? Because Eddie Griffin had just got kicked out of the Comedy Store, was still looking for a place to go. He goes to the Laugh Factory, tries to do Eddie Griffin, where he goes forever, and they're flashing the light. They're killing his mic. He won't get off stage. And it's just Pookie just whack, just walks up on stage, starts swinging on dudes. It's crazy ass shit.
Oh, I ain't going over there. I don't want to get into a fist fight with nobody.
Dude, the Chocolate Sundays at Laugh Factory is one of the greatest shows you'll ever play. Oh, I used to do that shit.
I did it years ago.
Shake. You could feel the room shake from those fucking good-looking black people. Like, gorgeous black women.
I was
women.
There when Chris Webber was dating the chick that was on every TV
yeah,
show.
Yeah, who's the supermodel?
Natalia Shire, cocksucker, whatever her name is.
You're the best.
All right, let me give some. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to Hitty Sigs, you bad motherfuckers. Always keeping it simple. People thanking us all the time on Twitter once they order from these guys. The product is fantastic. They got cigars. They got cigarettes, e-cigs with all different fucking flavors, raspberry, vanilla. Tremendous. If you're thinking about quitting smoking for the holidays, 24 milligrams, then you go down to 16, then you go to 8, then you go to 0. It's a tremendous gift. Listen, the New Year's coming. You don't want to keep smoking. Plus, you go to Vegas. You buy a fucking cigar, right? You light the cigar. You're not going to sit all night, smoke the fucking cigar. What are you going to do? You throw the cigar away? No. With Hitty Sigs, you get the same action you get from a fucking cigar. And after you've smoked 2 or 3 puffs, boom, you put it in your pocket. Go to HittySigs.com and press
Joey's Church
in the box and get what?
20% off.
Who the fuck do you think you're dealing with? Some Mama Luke from the other side? We're giving you 20% off, bitch. 20% off Hitty Sigs. You quit smoking. Your fucking lungs feel better, the whole thing. Who's better than you? My man over there, Edward Garber, making it happen for you cocksuckers for the holidays. So go to HittySigs.com or go to JoeyDiaz.net and press in.
Joey's Church.
Bam! 20% off like a motherfucker. All right, for you people trying to get in shape mentally, physically, you know, spiritually, whatever the fuck.
Emotionally.
Emotionally, Onnit.com. That's it. That's all I got to tell you. You're like, Joey, why? What do I get when I go to Onnit? You get yourself in top condition in all those areas. Spiritually, I don't fucking know. That, you got to go see a priest and tell him your fucking problems. But physically and emotionally, Onnit will help you. Alpha Brain, start with Alpha Brain. Money back guarantee, we don't even want the fucking product back. Who else does that shit, all right? 100%, we don't want the product back. Gets you focused, gets your head right, gets everything going. And then from there, if you want to try the Shroom Text, nobody's dying from Ebola. Nobody's dying from Ebola. Shroom Tech Sport, Shroom Tech, what's the other one?
Immune.
That's the one. Nobody's dying from
Ebola.
It's the Ebola
cure.
That's the fucking motto right there. They got battle ropes. They got fucking kettlebells. That I can't give you 10 points off. But start with the supplements. Go over there. They got this new oil, this coconut oil. Tremendous. You put it in your smoothies, your skin, your dick gets hard. Who's better than you? Onnit.com. Go to JoeyDiaz.net. Go to Onnit.com. See what they got. If you like it, you can either go to JoeyDiaz.net or go to Onnit and press in.
Church.
Oh, C-H-U-R-C-H in the box like a motherfucker. And start with their 10% off. If you like the product, they got the Stay Onnit product where they send it right to your fucking house every month on the 1st. You don't got to do dick. You're going to leave the house. You got to click on the page. They'll send you the hemp protein to your house. They'll send you the Alpha Brain to your house. They'll send you the Shroom Tech. you'll be walking around like Kip Coop Kadoop. You know what I'm saying? Who the fuck you think you're dealing with here? At least I am. How high are you?
I'm really high.
Look at the, what the fuck? 10 milligrams?
You are high, dog.
10 yeah. milligrams?
That was not, at least give me the credit I deserve. That was like what, 70?
It was 70. If we split it, it's 35.
You look like a happy okay. jack-o'-lantern. So it was, anyone ever told you that?
That's how I feel.
You weigh 35 milligrams.
Okay.
And the joint I got here, this is East Bay grown. Somebody gave me a nice present. I forgot to call you and thank you. I got the stuff in my wallet. Let me see if I got it in my wallet. I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be here love in vain. You know what I'm saying?
It's not like you're not high.
These people took good care of me.
Do you get how often do you get high, Lee?
Whenever I'm with him.
He gets high when he's supposed to get high. Every day. He's got to go to debt school here. You know, this ain't no... This is what happens if the fucking the Russians get you? Isn't they gonna give you goulash? Fuck no!
What?
They're gonna make you smoke dope every day, and you're gonna be prepared. They can't trick you. They're gonna try to tell you you're a Russian Jew. You're gonna tell them suck my dick and call me shorty. I was born in 1940. I don't know nothing about what the fuck you're talking about. All right? I know nothing. All I know is it's the Marine's birthday today. Do you people know that?
Yeah.
How many,
cool,
how many
man.
Years today?
I don't know.
How many years you don't fucking know these people?
What do you think it is, 150?
The reason why your people use your fucking yarmulke is because of the fucking Marines, huh? And you don't know. You got some pair of balls. It's their birthday. Don't make me make you get up and fucking
239th birthday.
239th birthday defending this beautiful fucking country.
Wow.
I want to salute the Marine Corps. All you savages at your house, keep stabbing motherfuckers. Shoot them in the head. Take their heroin. Do what the fuck you got to do. You got one shot at being a fucking soldier. You guys are out there. Who the fuck are us to judge you? Who the fuck are we to judge these soldiers? They're fucking Marines. 239th Battalion and shit. Don't make me go crazy and start stabbing motherfuckers tonight. Sam Tripoli, what's going on with you? I know you had the CD.
The CD went out. Just writing.
Don't make me start it. Oh, shit.
There we go.
Why you gotta do this to me? I'm getting emotional and shit, man. The Marines, be all you can be. I salute you bad motherfuckers. I salute any of you in the armed forces. The Army, the Navy, the fucking Coast Guard, the Air Force. You're out there banging it out. Shit gets heavy. Who do you think goes down first? You
Old Navy.
Old Navy. I love you all. But happy birthday to the Marines. The baddest motherfuckers out there. Four fucking servicemen were sitting around a campfire one night, and they were telling stories. The guy in the Army Ranger was talking about how he stabbed three Puerto Ricans in the War of Ouijimi. The Air Force guy was talking about how he shot down a bunch of fucking Vietnamese cocksuckers in the War of fucking Two Fingers. And the Navy guy was talking about how he was a SEAL, he put explosives, and the whole time, the Marine was stirring the soup with his dick. You understand me? The thing was boiling, and the Marine was just stirring it with his dick. I salute you. Happy birthday, you bad motherfucking savages. That's how you do it. You fucking put your heart on tape when you salute the armed forces. You think I'm going to be one of those momos at the airport saluting them? Fuck no. They got the green suit on. They got chemical warfare on. I keep fucking walking. What the fuck you think you're dealing with? Joey Bananas on a Monday night cocksucker?
Joey Bananas.
You were sitting there watching some Monday night football like the step that you are. That's what the fuck is wrong with you. It's Monday night. Fuck football. Why be like the rest of these communists watching that shit on ESPN? It used to be on ABC. Shit got ugly. Shit went down, so they put it on ESPN like a fucking... It's like putting black people in the back of the bus. You don't do that. You don't do that to football. But these people accept it for what they are. They get what the fuck they deserve. Talk to me, Sammy Trips. I got all emotional when I hear that statue.
Oh, that was a beautiful rant, dude. The story, the classic Marine stirring his soup with his dick.
That's it.
Just got me.
That's what they do.
That's what they do, dude. That was classic. You're the king. You're the king of the Segway. It's like the non sequiturs.
Did you see Lone Survivor? Awesome.
What?
Did you see that Lone Survivor movie?
Yeah,
that was crazy.
Read
like,
the book.
Like, I literally just bought the book. They had to throw themselves down mountains.
Yeah.
I couldn't, like, can you imagine doing that?
Yeah, like, that's crazy.
They had a
shit.
Guy on ESPN last night.
That's a movie with Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a crazy fucking movie.
Right?
I've watched it three times in hotels.
Dude, I've been to Afghanistan. It's fucking nuts over there.
Yeah, bro, listen. You're crazy. God bless those motherfuckers. I can never do that now.
And then, like,
I chickened out. I wouldn't take the blood test. That's how much I was. I would have been a fucking good Marine at that time. I was crazy. You could have sold me anything. You could have sold me a bill of lading. I would have gone to Beirut and shit. I would have fucked the motherfuckers up, but I wouldn't take the blood test. That's fucked up.
If there was a draft, I would go.
Now at this age?
No. I mean, I'm too old. If they said, hey, dude, at 42, you can go fly.
If something happened that the country got in trouble and I could go in a helicopter and drop those bombs on people, that's my speed. I'll drop bombs
on people. Superhero.
Yeah, I don't get it. Just press a button. Like, Apocalypse Now, shoot the fuck. I could do that. I can't jump walls in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, me neither, dude.
You know, I can't parachute out of an airplane. I'll break my fucking kneecaps. There ain't a parachute that can hold me. But I'll tell you what, I'll drop fucking missiles on you. I'll help you out. I'll load the fucking planes. I could do that, but I just can't. I'm too old for that. I can't breathe and shit.
Yeah, dude, I could barely play basketball.
Yeah, no.
Well, did you see that guy on ESPN who jumped on a grenade because, like, to save, like, the guys in the house below him and, like, blew off half of his face? He was, like the second Marine ever since the Korean War to get, like, the Medal of Honor. Like, the only living Marine. Like, he jumped on a grenade. Like, who would have that thought process? Like, that's crazy.
A Marine.
Yeah.
A fucking Marine.
That's love, dog.
That's what it's all about. That's that bill of lading, buying it. It's special. You know, we never bought it, and I feel bad at times.
Yeah, I feel bad sometimes.
Coming out now, 38, 40, being a security fucking guy with a weapon, being able to shoot motherfuckers and go, what the fuck is your problem? 10 years. Get the fuck out of my face. I did 20 years killing fucking immigrants. You're going to give me time now. I've killed everybody. Black, yellow, half of Africa. I've shot Spanish people, Bolivians, and now you want to throw me in jail for shooting some drunk at a bar. Get the fuck out of my face. Fuck you. Go look at the medals I got, bitch.
Well, there's that movie coming out about that sniper who killed more people than everybody. He's like had the most confirmed kills by a sniper. And here's the crazy thing. He was trying to help, like, this guy who just came back from the war with his, you know, post-traumatic syndrome. And they took him to a shooting range. The guy went crazy and shot both of them. It's sad, man. But it's like the most confirmed kills by a sniper. There's a movie coming out.
It's Clint Eastwood's movie. He's directing it.
Well, you know, man, once you give a shark the taste of fucking blood, it's tough to pull them back. You know, once they have that weapon in their hand, it's like giving somebody a pound of coke every time you see them. It's all over, Lee. Lee, you're looking good tonight. How many pounds you lose now?
66.
Look at you.
League, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, that's like, I shouldn't have put it on, but no, it feels good.
What are you working out to?
Just cardio. I'm still kind of scared to do like kettlebells or something, but I'm going to have to start that soon.
I don't want to do no sit-ups tonight. I don't want to do no sit-ups and shit.
You do some karate and shit?
I did karate when I was a kid, but no, not recently.
Karate over at Toshiro's and fly through the air. I can just imagine a little gi on with an Israeli star on the back.
Israeli samurai?
Throwing fucking sidekicks for Putin. I don't even know who the fuck Putin is. Trip, so you're at Sacramento when? This weekend?
Yeah, this whole weekend. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And Molly was nice enough to let me not do Sunday because I got to get back to L.A. Because in the main room, I'm doing my big Armenian bone marrow donor registry thing. It's my one show a year. It's my karma show. Because, you know, the rest of the year, I'm a shady motherfucker. All my hobbies are felonies. You know, I'm in the weird shit. So this is the one show I do that kind of gives back to the universe. And it's this weird shit because Armenians have unique genetic makeups. Because we were a Christian country surrounded by Muslims, so we didn't want to hook up with any of them. So we just kept hooking up with us. We're kind of like the hillbillies of, you know, the Eastern Europe. And it's hard for us to find genetic matches. So my cousin Michelle and this doctor named Dr. Frieda Jordan decided, because my cousin Michelle's daughter got cancer. So I got bone marrow cancer and they couldn't find a match. So they decided to start the Armenian Bone Marrow Donor Registry. And it's crazy, dude, because you do charity events all the time and you never really see where your hard work goes. Here it's like you see the fruits of your labor. It's crazy, man. It's one of the coolest things I'm a part of. We're going on our 12th year of doing it. 12 years, dude. I've been doing shows at the Comedy Store. 12 years. That's a long time.
You're a badass Armenian.
You're
a representative.
I'm trying, dude, because I didn't know that. See, I thought I was white when I moved out to L.A. And then I was doing a joke at the Hustler Cafe where this guy, Tony Montana, used to do a show. He was this crazy, like, coked out fucking dude who ran a comedy show at the Hustler Cafe. And I'm doing a joke about how hard it is to be white. And then Paul Mooney came up to me afterward. He goes, oh, homie, you ain't white. You's Armenian. You's a nigga. And I was like, whoa! I just got called the N-word by the king of the N-word. It's fucking great, dude. And it was the coolest thing ever. And then I realized, that's when I realized Armenians are different, like, out west than they are back east. Back east, they're white. They look white. You wouldn't even know. If you saw my aunts, you'd be like, whoa, they're white people. Here, it's like they're Persian Armenian. And they tend to be a little more angrier out here.
One of my friends growing up was Armenian in Jersey. I never put it together until I came here about 5 years ago that his name was Karnik Asadurian. I always think about him because he was a tough guy. And once he found out my mother died, he always would come to me and ask me if anybody was bothering him. And him and his brother, their hobby was picking up Volkswagen and turning them around. So however you park your Volkswagen, when you woke up the next day, it was pointed up the hill. And you're like, why? It was him and his brother. They were beasts. They weren't felons. They weren't criminals. Nothing like that. But when they had your back. And then there was another kid that was Armenian that I wasn't tight with. I knew him. I knew his sister. And I didn't, until this day, again, I didn't even know what an Armenian was. And he lit up four dudes. He was a tough motherfucker. So looking back, his name was Karnik Asadurian and Jack from the Haha.
Yeah.
His last name was Asadurian. And he said he had a bunch of relatives in New Jersey. So I knew I was on to something.
Armos are crazy, bro. The guy who owned Sanku, dude. His whole story, his whole family.
Who's Sanku?
Zanku Chicken. You ever eat Zanku Chicken?
Yeah. Where is that it? Where dude is who... it? Brother Bond, you go to Zanku, don't you?
No, I went once. There's one over on Sepulveda in Sherman Oaks. There's by the Target.
The big one is the one on Sunset back in the day off... Sunset and Normandy, dude. It's like,
hit me, yes.
It's some good ass shit. That dude who built that, who starred Zanku, went nuts, shot his whole family up. It's a whole crazy ass story. And now it's like, yeah, it's like,
we're
crazy.
Wasn't JJ the king of beep is Armenian?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, there's always rumors like Cher's Armenian. Do you know that? She's Armenian. And then there's also, there's this whole story that we like to hold on to that George Clooney's Armo, too. He's got a little Armo in him.
See, Lee, did you know that George Clooney had a little Armo to him?
A little Armo. I had long suspected.
You had what?
I think he's trying to say long
suspected. I had long suspected it, but we couldn't get it out.
Good to know.
Such a happy land. Fucking.
What's going on with the Naughty Show?
You know, right now, I was doing the radio show for a while. I've taken a little break because I want to get back to video, but I want to do it like old school, like kind of like Howard Stern's like cable show. You remember back in the day? So I'm talking to some people. I'm trying to get it on demand because these people think if to do a dirty show, you got to be a chick. It's some weird shit that's going on right now. So I'm like, I'm going to throw it on demand. So I'm having a meeting this week with some people to do like a low budget, like kind of like, not public access, so but a show where like it's on demand. We shoot it and we put it on demand, and then I'm trying to get in Vegas still. So I'm just Vegas is great, dude. A lot of people don't like Vegas. I went to college out there. I was running Rebel. You know, I love Vegas. I think it's a crazy place because there's so many casinos opening now, and these casinos are opening up two or three like theaters. And these theaters are running a show every 2 hours. There's so many theaters and there's so many shows now that like artists can actually make a living there. So I'm working on getting out there. I got a couple show pitches going out there and I'm just working on it. So now I'm starting a new podcast. It's called Twisted and it's just me talking shit.
That's why I love you, Sam Triple. Yo, what about you, cocksuck?
What's up,
you
buddy?
You sit there like fucking zombie land and just look around like a mamaluka yeah.
Right now, yeah.
Everything, all right, 30 yeah. milligrams. This is what you do to me. This is it.
Well, on top of what did I have earlier?
That was
today.
Fucking 10 hours ago. That shit shouldn't even be in your system. Did you take a nap?
I only got a 30-minute nap, yeah.
How come that's it?
I don't know.
What did you eat after the spaghetti, cocksucker, with the edible in you?
I had a bag of the caramel Rice Krispies, rice cakes.
So you're done for the day?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not allowed to eat anymore?
Not if I want to stay under my calories, no. But
how many calories you got left?
None.
Yeah, zero calories.
Zero.
Can you even breathe?
yeah, I can breathe, but it just, because I couldn't go to the gym today because I don't go high. I don't know how you do that, Joey.
Have you tried to work out high?
Once, and I felt like I was going to fall off the machine, and I just couldn't do it. I just left, like, because he, when you were talking about listening to music in your headphones, that you do that to me today. You turned up music on me because it freaks me out when you're listening to, like, Black Sabbath, like, and I'm stoned out of my mind. I don't know how you do that.
You don't like Black Sabbath stoned?
I like it, but there's some dark songs, like really intense, and when you're high, you get, like, a little paranoid. Or I do, I don't know. Seems like you guys like it, but...
Well, you know the edible before you go?
Not even a chance.
What do you like to listen to while you're high?
Nothing.
I just
go home. Look at his face.
You see his face? All he can think about is going home, sitting on that couch with the remote, closing the lights, and eating like a fucking savage. That's all he can think about when he gets high.
You are so baked. It's so great. I wish I was that high.
Listen to me, bro. If he doesn't get high with me, he doesn't get high. This is why he has to get high on these nights. Because if not, he has gummy bears in his house, got weed. He sits there with his girlfriend straight as a fucking monk, like a fucking mook that he is. That's why I got to burn him up. All right, Sam Tripoli, I love you, cocksucker.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it, Sacramento,
let me tell you something. I don't know if Death Squad's been slipping this year. I didn't go this year, but I'll be there like in February and March for sure. I got dates already. I think Lee's coming up with me.
Lee, you do stand-up?
No.
He just comes to do the podcast one night or something. Go see my man Sam Tripoli. You're going to get a fucking tremendous fucking show out of him. You know, Sammy Trips don't fuck around.
Springs the heat. Dude, I take pride in my live shows.
No. So please, if you're not doing nothing, which you're not. It's fucking Sacramento. What are you going to do? Go to a car show in the daytime? What happened? The mules are coming to town. What is it?
Underrated city, yeah. Sacramento.
Sacramento, you got to get out of the house. You got to smoke and crack and see what life is about, all right? It's not all fucking going to bed at 10 o'clock. Go see my man, Sammy Trips to the Punchline. What's the number to the Sacramento Punchline? Let's get some people calling up right now. Let's get the webpage. You should have had this shit all fucking up, Lee, but you're eating those edibles again. You're slipping, cocksucker. This is what I'm talking about.
I apologize.
Jesus Christ almighty.
All right, it's 916-925-5500.
Call right now. Get some tickets. You're going to have a great time, my main man.
Guarantee it.
Where are you New Year's Eve?
I'm going to be in Toronto.
Oh, shit. Who are you going up there
Underground.
With?
I'm headlining.
Oh, shit. This is what I'm talking about. Sammy Trips making it happen. Where are you going to be at New Year's, cocksucker?
Aren't we at the Ice House?
I don't know about we. I might not take you that. I don't know. You're slipping lately.
Okay.
You're eating edibles. I don't know about you. I love you, cocksucker. We'll be back Wednesday night. See you Wednesday. Stay black. I want to thank Onnit one more time. Hitty Sigs. And also, I'm just letting you guys know what's coming on board. A little surprise for you guys. I got Iron Dragon TV coming on. Martial arts, classic kung fu, the Ip Man series, Tai Chi Zero, more movies. Go to Iron Dragon TV. Just go over to the webpage, see what they got right now. I think you need something to click on your email. Just put your email on there. I'll get all the codes for you and stuff. But this is Roku, correct?
Yeah, it's a channel on your Roku. So it's what they're doing is they're renting, or they have a ton of like all the martial arts.
Iron Man is the best. Yeah. That guy's the best.
They got Iron Man series. They got Tai Chi Zero. It's 48 rentals for 99 cents. I'll have a code for you to get two free
really?
Ones.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. This is a great deal.
That's a great
this
deal.
I went out with Dave the other night in Chinatown. He took me out to dinner. Great guy. He's been around for a while. He knows his shit. So we'll let you know more about it on Wednesday and how
you're
to
a
sign
man.
Up for this and everything. I want to thank Sam Tripoli again for
thanks
coming.
Thanks for having
in.
Me on, dude.
Go
I love
to Sacramento.
You.
Marines, I love you, cocksuckers. All the shout outs. Stay black to my friends up there. Who gave me the weed? I don't know where I put your card. I know it's somewhere at the house. It's my main man who drew the picture. I left the picture up at the Punchline. They're going to use it for a month, and they're going to mail it to me. But don't worry. I got you covered. I got your name at the house. I just didn't get it out. I love you guys. Stay black.
This show is sponsored by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word CHURCH to get 10% off any of their great products, Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. And go to hitesigs.com and use code word Joey's Church to get 20% off of the best e-cigs in the market. The proof is in the vape.
And go to Iron Dragon TV and take a look-see. And we'll get back to you on Wednesday with more details, all right?